Hi everyone. Just a few quick announcements. First, starting with the episode after this one, Stories After Dark will be available exclusively on Spotify. So if you're listening to this on any other platform, please search Stories After Dark on the Spotify app, follow the show, and listen to it there for free. Because all content moving forward will now be exclusively on Spotify, there will no longer be early access to the same episodes on Patreon, but you can still support the show there for access to some of the older content. And finally, thanks to everyone for listening to the show and getting it to where it can now be a Spotify exclusive with weekly episodes, especially those who have been there since the very beginning. Folks like Jessica of the Asian Madness podcast, the guys of Creepsilog, and Shed Hiron who exposed the show to a bigger audience, and everyone who continues to get in touch on social media and email by suggesting stories or simply expressing how much they appreciate the show. This is for all of you. Now on with the episode. On May 20, 1987, in the operating room of the Olongapo City General Hospital, a nurse placed inside a jar a blue plastic object she had just washed with disinfectant solution. The object had been extracted from a young girl's genital area, and it was the cause of the blood poisoning that led to her death. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify with new episodes out every Friday. This is the story of Rosario Baluyot, who died 7 months after she was sexually abused by a man named Heinrich Stefan Ritter. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic nature of this story. Rosario Baluyot was born in the early 1970s in Subic, Zambales, to Policarpio Baluyot and Anita Burgos. They were a poor family, and when Anita died in 1982, Policarpio went away and left Rosario in the custody of Anita's mother, Maria Burgos Turla. One day, Rosario ran away from her grandmother's house and she began living on the streets of Olongapo City, Zambales. In those days, Olongapo was at the height of its reputation as a sin city due to its many nightclubs that catered to the needs of American servicemen visiting the adjacent Subic Bay Naval Base. Rosario, who was already an adolescent, regularly hung around in the vicinity of those nightclubs, particularly along Magsaysay Drive. She had earned the nickname Tomboy among the street children in the area, and by all accounts, it seemed she had gotten herself into sex work. At around midnight of October 10, 1986, she and a boy named Jesse Egan Ramirez were chosen for the night from a few street children by a Caucasian man named Heinrich Stefan Ritter. Ritter brought Rosario and Jesse into his room at the MGM Hotel along Magsaysay Drive and he told them both to take a bath. Jesse went first, and when Rosario went for her turn inside the bathroom, Ritter placed on a table photos of dressed-up young boys and three objects that, to Jesse, looked like Vicks nasal inhalers. Ritter took one of those inhalers and played with it in his hands. Ritter instructed Jesse to lie down in bed naked. Ritter took off his own clothes and began fondling Jesse, then he guided the boy's hand to fondle him the same way. As they masturbated each other, Rosario emerged from the bathroom and Ritter told her to remove her clothes and join them. Ritter positioned himself between the two children and he started fondling Rosario. With Ritter's attention now on Rosario, Jesse began to feel sleepy. Rosario touched Jesse to get his attention, and when the boy turned to look at her, he saw that Ritter was attempting to penetrate her vaginally with his penis, but he couldn't do it because of his size. That was the last thing that Jesse saw before he turned his gaze away and fell asleep. The following morning, Ritter paid Rosario 300 pesos, which is roughly 2,100 pesos or $43 in today's money, and to Jesse he gave 200 pesos, then he left them both in the hotel. The two children went downstairs and Rosario told Jesse that Ritter had left an object in her vagina the night before. They didn't know what to do as Ritter had already left, so they parted ways and didn't bring the issue to anyone else's attention. When the two children saw each other again the next day, Jesse asked Rosario if the object had already been taken out. Rosario said yes, but when they met again later that night, she complained to him about a pain in her genital and stomach area. When he asked her about the object again, she told him that it still hadn't been removed. Another day, Jesse saw Rosario again, visibly in pain. But when he tried to talk to her, all that he got were obscene remarks. Jesse didn't see Rosario anymore after that incident, as he already went home to his aunt's house in Barrio Barreto to continue his studies in grade school. It's unclear what happened to Rosario after that, but the next time her activity was documented was 7 months later on May 14, 1987. A boy named Gaspar Alcantara was scavenging for garbage scraps along Magsaysay Drive near the Subic Bay Naval Base when he saw Rosario near a bake shop wearing a bloody skirt and writhing in pain. People around her kept staring, but none of them dared to help because of the foul smell that was coming from her. Alcantara took pity and rushed Rosario in a jeepney to the Olongapo City General Hospital. He filled out a form at the emergency room indicating the patient's details. Name, Rosario Baluyot. Address, Nagbakulaw, Lower Calaclan, Olongapo. Age, 12 years old. And guardian, his own name, Gaspar Alcantara. No one came to visit Rosario after Alcantara left her at the hospital. It was for this reason that Jessica Herrera, Fe Israel, and Sister Eva Palencia, members of a charity organization who were in one of their missions at the hospital, decided to help Rosario with her medication through their program for young indigent patients. The three women interviewed Rosario, though they only got her name and age out of her, as she immediately clamped up when she was asked about her family and where she lived. On her first day of confinement, Rosario showed symptoms of gastroenteritis, such as vomiting and loose bowel movement, but these turned out to be part of something more serious. On May 17, 1987, 3 days after she was brought to the hospital, the physicians examined Rosario and saw that her abdomen was distended and tender. They discovered a foreign object lodged inside her vagina, causing the organ to secrete the foul-smelling and blood-tinged discharge that had stained her skirt before. Rosario's doctors found it difficult to extract the object because it seemed to be deeply embedded into the vaginal tissue. Rosario, however, couldn't undergo an emergency operation as the hospital director's consent hadn't been obtained yet. 2 days later, on May 19, 1987, the hospital director, Dr. Reino Rosete, operated on Rosario himself. There was pus everywhere in Rosario's abdominal cavity, and her organs showed signs of septicemia or blood poisoning, which was due to the infection resulting from the foreign object being left inside her vagina. When the object was finally taken out, the doctors found it to be one end of a battery-operated plastic vibrator. Blue in color and approximately 3 inches in circumference and 2 inches in length. The incision on Rosario's abdomen was closed and the operation was considered successful. Rosario was left in the care of anesthesiologist Dr. Leo Cruz, who stayed with her in the ward for about 30 minutes then left. The following day, on May 20, 1987, Rosario's condition worsened and she was pronounced dead from a cardiorespiratory arrest secondary to septicemia between 2 and 2:15 in the afternoon. The three women from the charity organization were informed of Rosario's death and they immediately coordinated with the Olongapo City Police to find the person responsible for the vibrator piece that gradually took Rosario's life. Since Rosario had been living along Magsaysay Drive, police gathered around 43 street children from the area. They learned from some of the children that they first heard of a foreign object being left inside Rosario's vagina after she was with Jesse Ramirez and a Caucasian man at the MGM Hotel before Christmas of the previous year. The police located Jesse, who confirmed this, and he referred to the Caucasian as an American man with homosexual mannerisms. A composite sketch was then made from Jesse's description of the man, but Jesse recognized none of the American servicemen whose photographs were later brought to him based on the sketch. The police expanded the search for their suspect, as the so-called American could also be any other Caucasian nationality, which therefore meant that their suspect pool would not just be limited to troops in the naval base. They obtained information that a lot of foreign gay men frequented Ermita, Manila, so on September 23, 1987, they sent a team there composed of Agent Conrado Salonga, Police Corporal Marino Victoria, Police Corporal Andres Montaon, and a certain Mr. Heinzel. They also brought a young boy named Michael Johnson and Jesse Ramirez himself to help identify their suspect. During their first night in Manila, the team scoped out Luneta Park as they had heard that foreign gay men also liked to hang around the area, but they didn't see a man matching the suspect's description. Two nights later, on September 25, 1987, while they were at the corner of Amabini and M.H. Del Pilar streets, a Caucasian man approached the two boys, Jesse and Michael, and looked at them admiringly. Jesse told Agent Salonga that the man resembled the suspect, so the boys were instructed to go with the Caucasian and strike up a conversation. The Caucasian was later arrested and taken to the Manila Western Police District after the boys returned to report that he was indeed the same man who brought Rosario and Jesse to Olongapo's MGM Hotel. His passport and ID showed that he was Heinrich Stefan Ritter, though he was not an American but rather an Austrian national. And among Ritter's other personal belongings were three nasal inhalers. With the help of Gaspar Alcantara, the women from the charity organization located Rosario's grandmother, Maria Burgos Turla, who was encouraged to file a case against Ritter at the Olongapo City Fiscal's office. Ritter, through his legal counsel, attorney Edmundo Legaspi, initially tried to settle the case with the amount of 15,000 pesos, which is roughly 440,000 pesos or 8,800 US dollars in today's money. But Maria didn't accept this, knowing Ritter was liable to pay damages anyway. By the time Maria received a letter from Legaspi telling her to get a lawyer for the case, Maria could no longer bear the whole situation and was considering settling the case. She arranged for a meeting with Ritter and Legaspi through her nephew Conrado Marcelo. Both parties agreed upon the amount of 20,000 pesos, but since Ritter only had initially agreed upon 15,000 pesos on him, he paid that amount to Maria with the understanding that she was to receive the remaining 5,000 pesos later. Maria was made to sign a statement where she was asked to change Rosario's age, but the remaining 5,000 pesos was left unpaid as Legaspi could no longer attend to Maria's case after becoming an officer in charge of Olongapo City. The case ended up in court anyway, and Ritter pleaded not guilty to the charge of rape with homicide. His defense team argued that Rosario's death was due to the incompetence of Dr. Rosete, the hospital director who operated on Rosario, and that the victim was already 13 years of age, so what Ritter did to her wasn't statutory rape. On March 29, 1989, 2 years after Rosario's death, the court rendered its decision and found Heinrich Stefan Ritter guilty of rape with homicide, and he was sentenced to reclusión perpetua, or 20 to 40 years of imprisonment. He was ordered to pay Rosario's heirs 60,000 pesos, which is about 352,000 pesos or 7,200 US dollars in today's money, and an additional 10,000 pesos in legal fees. Unfortunately, the case still wasn't over, and it was about to take a completely different turn. Ritter appealed the court's decision on the matter of the homicide being committed by him and Rosario being less than 12 years old when the alleged rape was committed. The case of homicide hinged upon whether Ritter was responsible for leaving the vibrator piece inside Rosario. Principal witness Jesse Ramirez testified that he saw Ritter holding what looked like a white Vicks nasal inhaler, but he didn't actually see Ritter insert it, or a vibrator for that matter, into Rosario's vagina, nor could he identify the object that Ritter was holding to be the same object extracted from Rosario. The vibrator piece from Rosario was actually blue, which made Jesse's testimony about the object unreliable, even more so when he retracted his initial statement and said that he remembered the inhaler to be grayish blue. Jesse also testified that Rosario had already been feeling pain in her genital and stomach area after their encounter with Ritter. It seemed inconceivable that Rosario endured that pain for 7 months, so the defense brought up the testimony of expert witness Dr. Pedro Solis, who had more than 40 years of medico-legal practice working for the National Bureau of Investigation. According to Dr. Solis, infection due to a foreign object being left inside one's vaginal canal would set in within a period of 2 weeks, and the manifestation of symptoms might not only be localized but rather systemic. It likely would have been quicker in Rosario's case, with the object being bigger and with dry cell battery components left inside an organ with a very thin, sensitive membrane such as the vagina. The defense also brought up the testimony of Dr. Val Barcinal, the first obstetrician gynecologist who examined Rosario at the hospital. During one examination before her surgery, Rosario said to her, quote, "Ginamit ako ng negro at siya ang naglagay nito," end quote. Which, translated, meant that a black guy was responsible for a recent sexual encounter and for leaving the foreign object inside her. Three witnesses had testimony supporting the fact that Rosario was conscious and in her right mind before her surgery, so with all these considered, it seemed unlikely that Ritter was the one responsible for leaving the vibrator piece that eventually killed Rosario. On the matter of the alleged rape, the court had resolved that Rosario was below 12 years of age on the night of her encounter with Ritter, but the defense argued that she was already at least 12 years old. The victim's age is crucial in determining whether a case is statutory rape, as Article 335 of the Revised Penal Code defines this type of rape as having carnal knowledge of a woman under 12 years of age, in which case force, intimidation, deprivation of reason, or unconsciousness don't have to be present. The prosecution could only provide oral evidence to support Rosario's age, as she unfortunately didn't have a birth certificate. Her grandmother, Maria, testified that she remembered Rosario's birth date in relation to the death of Maria's brother, but the date of death or funeral of that brother was never established. Rosario's father, Policarpio Baluyot, appeared in court after he found out about his daughter's death in the papers. He testified that as far as he could remember, Rosario's date of birth was December 22, 1975, which would have made her 10 years old at the time of her encounter with Ritter. He also said he was certain that she was already 1 year old at the time she was baptized. The defense produced Rosario's baptismal certificate showing a date of birth of December 26, 1973 and a baptismal date of December 25, 1974, which did prove the 1 year gap between the two events. Rosario's father testified that he had a baptismal certificate different from the one presented by the defense, but he couldn't present it in court, and even if he could, this was disproved by the testimony of Father Roque Villanueva, who was the head of the parish church where Rosario was baptized. According to the baptismal registry book presented by Father Villanueva, the details on the defense team's baptismal certificate matched what was in his records. Even if the law only recognizes baptismal certificates as proof only of baptisms administered, this was the closest thing anyone had to an official document proving that Rosario was indeed 12 years old during her encounter with Ritter. And since there seemed to have been no proof of the use of force, intimidation, deprivation of reason, or unconsciousness, Ritter and Rosario's sexual activity was considered consensual. The previous judgment on Heinrich Stefan Ritter was ultimately reversed and he was acquitted on the grounds of reasonable doubt. According to the decision, quote, "Though we are acquitting the appellant for the crime of rape with homicide, we emphasize that we are not ruling that he is innocent or blameless. It is only constitutional presumption of innocence and the failure of the prosecution to build an airtight case for conviction which saved him, not that the facts of unlawful conduct do not exist. The sexual exploitation committed by the appellant should not and cannot be condoned," end quote. Ritter was still ordered to pay Rosario's heirs the amount of 30,000 pesos in damages, half the amount he was originally ordered to pay them. He was also ordered to be deported back to Austria with prejudice to re-entry into the Philippines, which means that should he attempt to enter the country again in the future, this case can and will be used against him. Rosario's case, though not a victory, helped pave the way for significant legal reforms such as the Special Protection of Children Against Abuse, Exploitation, and Discrimination Act of 1992 and the Anti-Rape Law of 1997, which amended the previous definition of rape as defined in the Revised Penal Code of 1930. Under this revision, however, the age of sexual consent is still only 12 years, one of the lowest in the world and the lowest in Asia. While the law criminalizes sex with minors under the age of 18, it only does so if consent isn't present or if the act involves force, threat, or intimidation. On December 1, 2020, the Philippine House of Representatives passed a bill raising the country's age of consent from 12 to 16. Though the bill still has to pass the Senate before being signed by President Rodrigo Duterte, people are confident that it will soon become law. In a country where online child sex abuse is rampant, where 7 out of 10 abuse victims are children, and where more than 500 teenage girls get pregnant every day, this legislation for the protection of Filipino children has long been overdue. And it's a step closer to ensuring that girls like Rosario Baluyot, even if they were street children, don't have to resort to sex work for a living. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. Stay tuned next week for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This episode was written, narrated, and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.